Mitrovic. It's another.
Great stopping, John Castle.
Dempsey will try and chip one.
Hey, welcome to Fulham Fix. My name's Ivan Berry.
I'm Felix White.
And it's lovely to be back here in the studio. How you been, mate?
I've been really good, apart from Saturday, which I thought was going to be really good, first 20 minutes, when we were like Brazil.
Not even 20 minutes, the first half. Do you see the stats at halftime?
Gone.
It was, I think, 78% possession to Fulham to their 22 with our 11 or 12 shots to their one. And at that point, you're thinking two things, aren't you? You're thinking, right, we've either thrown away the chances, they're going to have the team talk of their lives, come out and be a totally different squad, which is kind of what they are, or we're going to keep going that way and eventually we're going to break through. I mean, notoriously, defensively, they're brilliant.
Right. They strangled us, yeah. If you're watching this or listening sometime in the future, we're referring to Newcastle winning 1-0 at the Cottage on Saturday, which has been the back end of... it's like a random results generator set of results over the last eight games. Like, I've never known anything like it. We've done Spurs 3-0.
Yeah.
We beat United 2-1 for the first time in 20-odd years away from home.
Yeah.
And then
We thrashed Brighton in there in the mix as well, yeah.
And then we've been beaten at Forest.
Yes.
Were we 3-0 down at Forest?
We were 3-0 down within the first half.
Yeah.
40 minutes or so,
Just chaos. Sheffield United, the most Fulhamish thing I've ever seen in my witness.
What a comeback, though, and what a way to get that kind of last-minute equaliser.
Well, I was going to say that we were technically 4-1 down.
Yeah.
And then the VAR gets overruled and we end up drawing that game 3-3.
Yeah.
Which is chaos.
Yes.
So it's very hard to judge what this season is. But what I would say positively that you were just saying is that first half against Newcastle, especially Willian, it actually landed. I mean, we've obviously had him on talks in depth with Willian here, but it landed what a special footballer he is to have at a Cottage, and the way he drifts with the ball. And he really is in a place at the moment where we're seeing those little touches and flicks that are just the hallmarks of absolute world-class footballers.
Yeah.
So that's nice to see, isn't it?
100%, man. Like you said, Willian's one of those players where you're like, you wished he was 26, 27. But then if he was 26, 27, he'd be playing for Barcelona or, you know, again, one of the clubs he's played for in the past.
Right, yeah.
No disrespect to us at Fulham, but, you know, we've got him in at a beautiful moment, but I don't know whether don't know what's going to happen next season, but yeah, he can certainly still play the game, play it beautifully.
Very much. And do you know what the great thing about Fulham is, Ivan?
Yeah, go on. Is this a segue?
Yes,
it
is
a segue. Yes.
Is that in our alumni
of
the history of Fulham Football Club, in recent history, we can track people like Willian, who played with Brazil, Pereira, recent guest.
Yeah.
That's actually, thank you for everyone to listen and watch that. That's been brilliant, the feedback to Pereira. That was a lovely episode. But we can also talk to footballers from the lower leagues that we have just as much affinity for, like Rob Scott from the 96-97 and a bit before, a bit after Mickey Adams' team, famous team. Yeah. He came down because he's working with Rotherham.
Yeah.
And we had a cup tie, didn't we? Third round cup tie.
Yeah, one of the dullest cup ties in the history of any football.
It was, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was awful.
Did we nick that 1-0 or something?
Oh, something. I can't even remember now. I've decided to sort of let it just disappear from my head.
God, that was so dull. Yeah. Anyway, so Rob Scott was in town for that, so we grabbed him. And this is a little bit more of a niche one, I think, probably for Fulham fans. But for me, it was a special one because this is the team I remember falling in love with Fulham Football Club with. So those names in that team are forever etched in my heart and my head. And we run through that with Rob, like reeling out these names like the cast of like Goodfellas or something.
Yeah.
Danny Cullip, Mickey Adams, Richard Jürgen Carpenter, Mickey Conroy. It could go on.
Yeah.
And the lovely thing about this chat is that he has that closeness with Fulham. But it actually was a couple of moments when he's actually seemed like he was going to go, didn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm putting words
into his... not at all, man. He got proper choked up. He was sort of, you know, there moments where he's fighting back the tears. And can I just say what's really nice is you can tell this is your era. This is where you fell in love with football.
Right.
And the way you talk so passionately. I've got to be honest, this is just slightly before my time. I'm like a year or two after is when I started coming.
Yeah.
It was nice to almost just witness this genuinely beautiful interview between the two, you know, the two of you. I'm there, I chime in every now and then, but you know, the passion there is really nice, and it's lovely to see.
Well, we mentioned it in the chat because you told me beforehand that when Mickey Adams came to do Forever Fulham on the pitch at halftime, he got the biggest sort of ovation really of any name actually, and there's been some really big ones.
Yeah.
So, and that's just a case in point that this is such an important Fulham side because they are, the personnel in this Fulham team are pre-Al-Fayed takeover and post it as well. So they are literally the tipping point in which you witness Fulham Football Club change, but they're the essence of it.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people my age and older that do miss that part of Fulham in some ways or feel very nostalgic about it.
Yeah.
So it's important that we keep connection with those guys because they understand Fulham Football Club in a way that players since it might not, you know.
Definitely.
So it's a beautiful chat. He played everywhere. Some great anecdotes. Should we throw to it?
I think so. Definitely.
Come on, Rob. All right. As we mentioned, it gives me, I'll firstly say it's so nostalgic, Rob Scott, looking at your face with the cottage behind me, because when I first started coming to Fulham, when the cottage looked different, significantly different to this, you were in all those teams. And my first memory, I'll put to you, I don't know if I've like imagined this.
If it's good, let's hope, yeah.
Well, it's definitely good. It's that you used to play behind the front two, but Jeff has told me that you played everywhere, like right back, right midfield.
Yeah.
Were you famous for your versatility?
Well, I wouldn't say famous. I'd say like, more so sort of latterly when I went to Rotherham more so. But
oh, right, okay.
Here.
You play up front and like.
Yeah, like we played like a front three. So Mickey Conroy, Darren Freeman, and then I kind of played on the right.
Names.
Yeah, so I played on the right of the front three with Paul Watson, played right back, although he was left footed.
Yes.
So he used to step inside his left foot and just whiz it around the corner to me.
Yeah.
And I'd either cross it or try and get a goal or whatever. So, yeah, very nostalgic going back to your point, walking down from up the road, looking at the cottage and thinking it was all that time ago. It sounds like 5 minutes ago to me.
Because you left in, what was it, 98 maybe? So
yeah.
Have you been back here since then?
Yeah, I came back for the reunion a couple of years ago, I've which was brilliant. This. It's great. I was just saying to my chief exec that how they look after you when you come here. And it's weird for me. It was what is now League Two, but I think the fans have this kind of affinity with that squad because it was the start of kind of where you are now.
100%.
Which at the time you don't realise.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously what preceded that was some pretty tough times.
Yeah.
You know, and looking at the stadium now, it is, you know, apart from the cottage and over that side hasn't changed too much. The rest of it is unrecognisable.
Yeah. I'm happy that you brought that up because, and I think one of the reasons, as well as being very successful in the 96-97 season, which is down in folklore and Fulham history, but I think one of the reasons that you stayed in people's minds is that, as you say, the collection of those players marked Fulham before and Fulham after Al-Fayed, and you're the only people that saw that transition actually happen. And just before we started recording, you were saying that you used to have to park, when you first turned up, you parked on the road like for the games type thing.
Yeah. Well, I used to come over from sort of Sutton, just outside of Sutton, Banstead, and drive in on a Saturday before a game, come through Richmond Park. You come in and there was no designated parking because there isn't around here anyway. But it was all, a lot of it was back then, park where you could and not too close.
Well, sorry, for the games?
Yeah. So I used to get here early if you could get across Putney Bridge without any traffic.
Yeah.
Get here early enough, park up within 5-10 minutes of walking.
Right.
And then walk to the ground and go in.
I remember it was used to be parked wherever you wanted.
Yeah.
Me and my dad, my granddad would all pull up as close as we could get because of granddad.
I'd expect that of you, not of the
players did. Yeah.
I thought they might get looked after a little bit.
That was first come, first serve. Yeah, but that was part of it. There was no airs and graces about us. And I was just saying there before, you used to walk into the cottage. So you didn't have too, you did, walking from your car to the you always hope you do well, because otherwise you get abuse from the fans or praise back. From the fans. You go and dump your bags in the cottage, come out, have a look at the pitch and then go back in. And then after the games, we used to get changed and then come over here. Obviously, this stand now where we're sat wasn't this.
It's terracing, isn't it?
It was open terracing with grass growing through it. and then all this area here where we're sat above was gravel. For some bizarre reason, it was like a gravel bank there. And I remember it distinctly because I can remember once having a chat with Mickey Adams there about why I wasn't playing. Towards the end of that promotion season, I'd been injured. And he said, oh, well, you should be happy. You've played 42 games or whatever it was. I'm like, yeah, but I want to play the last three, even though I've been injured. Anyway, it was gravel, like a gravel bank. And we used to go around the back of the riverside into the bar where all the fans were.
Right.
So you just go in after the game. And that was the norm. It wasn't like, I think people look at you now and say, what, are you mad?
But yeah.
It was brilliant. Oh, obviously, if you wouldn't go over if you'd had a bad game or you'd lost. But families were in the riverside. So you go and see your parents or your girlfriend or whoever was here to see you. And then you'd be in the bar and be there. Well, we used to be there till late on because we used to have it was brilliant here. I mean, the lads that we had here, it wasn't a drinking culture, but it wasn't a live like they live now culture. Right. Sure. It was, you know, you'd have a social after the game and, you know, the young lads, we came from all over, but I was fairly local. So we'd either go Putney or down to King's Road, less so, but more into Wimbledon Village.
Yeah.
And that was it. Single lad life was brilliant for me. I loved the nostalgia coming in was nothing but like, it's just brilliant.
Oh, man, it's so nice to be connected to a football club like that. Yeah. And there's the interesting thing is like all Fulham players have that history of it seems, like that sort of affection for the club. Can you like identify what that is exactly about Fulham, you think?
I think it's I don't know if it's the fact that it's from a fairly salubrious area in terms of what's round here.
Yeah.
You know, but the club was never that.
Yeah,
it was almost like you're a bit of a boil on the arse round here to start.
A boil on the arse.
It was because
we need a new slogan.
The club is certainly not now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
The demographic of fan has definitely changed.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I played here, a lot of the fans didn't live around it because they couldn't afford to live around it.
Right.
So they used to travel in, and it was almost that affinity that you had with the fans that they came from outside, but this was their club.
Yes.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, and the players were, you just bought into it because when I came, they were down the bottom of the league, you know, and we had to stay up that year. And it was, Mickey did a brilliant job. I was saying to my chief exec on the way in that he did an excellent job of bringing players in that were kind of cut loose from bigger clubs. I mean, I'd come from Sheffield United, which at the time had been a Premier League club and was a decent sized club. You know, Darren Freeman had come from lower down, but been at Gillingham and kind of let go. Paul Watson was the same. Richard Carpenter, the same.
He had all the
senior lads like Simon Morgan had been let go by Birmingham. Mickey Conroy had been let go by bigger clubs. And
Danny Cullip
had come in. I can't remember where Danny had come from.
Was Stannard the goalkeeper?
He was originally, but then Mark Walton came in.
Yeah, Mark Walton, yeah.
And Waltz was brilliant. Like, great guy, great leader of a social.
Yeah.
Being a Welsh lad, always at the front of the bus singing. Glenn Cockerell then came in.
Yeah.
Martin Thomas. I could name them all. It's like...
That's so interesting what you're saying, though. Sorry, I've just read but the... Because I never known that, but that really successful team was built on a collection of people that were sort of rebuilding their careers or had a point to prove and sort of found each other in that moment.
Exactly that. Mickey played on it well. Mickey was fiery at the best of times. And he used to get into you. He used to know how to press buttons. And it was like, you lot are just a rabbit, basically. And I've brought you in here and you're going to be better players. And this is what you are.
Yeah.
And we kind of went, yeah, we are. And there was a good group of young lads, like I said, Darren Freeman, myself, Martin Thomas, Paul Watson, Chippy, Jürgen, as you called him, amongst others. And we kind of bonded, but the older, more senior lads were excellent. You know, Morgs chipped in, and you know Nick Kuzak was Nick. You know, he was the intelligent one of the group, sitting in the front reading his Guardian newspaper on the bus. But that was just him, and no one really took because we were a bit of a rabble.
Yeah.
You know? And it was brilliant. I can't say anything other than great times here.
For people that don't know, who might be a bit younger than myself and Ivan, that team went from being second bottom of the lowest tier to a couple of years later getting promoted.
Yeah.
Mm. And then obviously...
It was the following year.
The following season getting promoted. Rob McAree, the mythological goal.
Yeah.
And then put the ball in a Carlo net. And then after that, obviously, is for when Alfie takes over. So what happens is, what from you're describing there, in 3 years is the entire history of Fulham Football Club, really, in a little microcosm.
Condensed into a short space of time. Because, you know, obviously before I came in, there was a lot of struggles. There was obviously the well-documented about the merger with QPR.
Mm.
And
yeah.
That hung around for quite a while. And then Jimmy Hill being the chairman and,
the,
you know, obviously this is prime real estate. And there was talks about selling the ground and relocating. And then I came in. Early 96, and we were second bottom of the league, and Ian Bramford was in charge, and he'd brought his sort of Southampton contingent with him. So Glenn was here, Mickey Adams was here, and Mickey was a player coach at the time. But Ian, within about three games, moved upstairs, which I don't think lasted that long. I can't really remember that side of it, but didn't last too long. And Mickey took over with Corky, and I knew Corky from Sheffield United. So I think that's how the move. Cork. Yeah. So Alan Cork, that's how the move kind of came about.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, it was just a really good time. It was like, we struggled to start with that first season, was staying up. We stayed up fairly okay in the end. And then the next, I can remember we played Gillingham here the last game of that season where we'd stayed up and Gillingham got promoted under Tony Pulis.
Wow.
And they celebrated on the pitch.
Yeah.
Proper celebrated.
Yeah.
And we were stood there going.
And there's that rivalry.
Yeah. So I can remember training the pre-season up at Epsom Downs, running our balls off as usual with Mickey. And at the end of the running session, he said, right, everybody lay down on the grass. And this is like sports science and at its best now. And he's like, right, I want you to lay down and close your eyes and think about what happened at our ground, Craven Cottage, the scenes that Gillingham, I've got shivers now, to be fair, thinking about it. What gets you a bit emotional, to be honest, what they did.
Yeah.
And I can distinctly remember that visualisation of them getting promoted. And he went, that'll be us at the end. And this is no, by the way. He said, that will be us because we're going to be stronger, fitter, more athletic than other teams in this league. We might not be better, but we will be all of those things.
Yeah.
And we were. And
that's extraordinary. How much of it goes down to a talk like that, do you think?
A lot.
Because it feels quite movie, that, doesn't it?
Yeah. You can sit here and go, oh, yeah, you know, everything gets embellished as you move along. But I, honest to God, I remember we were training at the Fire Brigade London grounds, and we used to run from there to Epsom Downs to the race course.
Yeah.
We did a pre-season session, and after that we were doing sit-ups. I remember it, and he said, right, done, lay back, da-da-da, and he said all that stuff. And at the time, you're probably thinking, yeah, all right, you know. But we were young. A lot of us were young lads, and you kind of go, yeah, all right, then, I'll have some of that. And you kind of get, whether you get bamboozled by it, or whether you believe it, or whether your older pro's thinking, I've heard all this before. Yeah. But I hadn't really heard that before.
That is so magical. Yeah, and do you know what I like to think as well is that if Mickey Adams hasn't taken this, as you described, rabble of players and had that year, maybe Fulham aren't in the shop window for Alfie and he thinks, oh, look, Fulham's buzzing.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean? So
could all come down to that point.
And I think that's why the fans kind of still see that group as that. Because they'll be sitting there thinking, well, we wouldn't be sitting there watching Premier League football.
Totally.
And I think that's why that affinity is there with a certain age group of fans is still there because it was pretty when I first came and it was for fans. I remember playing Torquay here in the pissing rain, and this stand here was virtually empty. You know, playing our local rivals at the time were Barnet because Alan Mullery was there, and obviously the links there, and they were at the top of that league at the time, and there was a bit of to and fro with Morgs and him in the press. And those were the games that we were playing. Mm. You know, that was our local derby, not playing Chelsea, not playing Brentford, not playing the top London teams in the Premier League. I think that's where it sort of all stemmed from.
But you mentioned Torquay, the famous game Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but the famous game we all talk about is going away to Torquay and losing that game to go second bottom. And everyone talking about that being the lowest moment in That was before you came in.
Yeah.
So that was Brentford brought you in after that game type thing.
Yeah, I think that might have been the season. I don't know if that was the season before or that season.
Yeah.
But I don't remember being in that
Right, okay.
In that squad at the time. Yeah. I came, back then there wasn't any windows, transfer windows, so it was like, I came, I think, I don't know exactly what month it was that I signed, but it was partway through a season, more than halfway through that season.
Yeah.
And we were bottom two.
Right.
I never even gave it a second thought. I thought, brilliant. Training at London Fire Brigade Grounds, which is 10 minutes from my mum and dad's house. My ex-girlfriend was down the road. I thought, right, I'll get back into that. And brilliant. The mates were there. You know, schoolmates and mates from Sutton were all local.
Yeah, sweet life.
You know, I've been living away for a couple of years up north, and it was brilliant. And I, like, it's just a this was my first real football experience of playing first team football. I've been to Sheffield United, not really played. I'd had a loan at Northampton. But this was my first football playing home.
Yeah.
So it was like, right, this is my first real memories of being a professional footballer in terms of games.
What do you remember of the atmosphere in 96, 97? Because it was all being terraced.
Yeah, it was good. Well, initially it wasn't so good because it was squeaky bum time, as the phrase is now wheeled out. But yeah, it was all terracing over there, you know, alongside the cottage. It was all standing, wasn't it? It was only the riverside was seats.
Riverside seats, yeah. Yeah.
And, the first year was a bit nerve-wracking. The second year my first full year, but the second season I was here, we got promoted. Yeah. So it was bouncing a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Away games were brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the one that springs to mind is the Carlisle game and the amount of fans, I mean, for the distance for that, the amount of fans were there. But Cambridge away, last game of the season, was a good atmospheres. You know, I can remember beating Scarborough here comfortably, and I think scored a couple, and it was just, I think the fans just sort of went, oh, all right, this is what it's like to win games of football. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a time where they sort of started to embrace it.
And what was your memories of Al Fayed coming in and taking over?
A little bit tinged with, okay, this is kind of the beginning of the end.
Mm. Okay.
Again, it was brilliant for the football club, don't get me wrong, but we'd gone from sort of rag-ass Rovers to, you know, as I think Mickey well documented in his book, sort of said we were shopping at Woolworths to then going and literally shopping at Harrods. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. I can remember when he first came in, it was, we went up to London to get measured for suits, and we're like, what? I mean, it's what, Fulham suits? It, you know, at Christmas we got a hamper, and so, yeah, it was like, idiot to work it out. You sat in a dressing room and all of a sudden Chris Coleman's coming in and Peter Beards is coming in.
Salako came. Was
John Salako came in. And a bit later on, Karl-Heinz Riedler's coming in and you're thinking, probably not going to get much of a game here. But it wasn't because you weren't good enough. Yeah. They were just better than you.
And it was that thing of them being names as well, wasn't it? And
sort there was a statement to be made. What he had was Harrods, was the name that he had there, and he wanted to make this similar.
Yeah.
So by buying big names in that played in the Premier League and played at the highest level was a statement to say this club's going to be fighting with the top end of the Premier League.
Yeah.
I think I was probably one. Obviously, Simon Morgan stayed pretty much all the way through until he then left to go down to Brighton, I think. I was probably one of the longer staying ones out of the younger lads.
Yeah.
Because I went on loan to Carlisle, funny enough. That was when you could do a month's loan.
Yeah.
And then I came back and played a few games. So I'd done quite well up there. And I came back and played up front with Peter Beardsley. And then I think...
How was that playing with Peter Beardsley?
He's a great bloke.
Yeah.
Honestly, one of the best pros you'd ever come across. There was no airs and graces. And there's no ego with him.
Yeah.
To say he'd been one of the best players in England for a long time.
I think he scored some free kicks, didn't he?
Lincoln was one of the games I played with him. He hit underneath the wall.
Rather than
trying to hit it over. They all jumped underneath the wall.
Skidded it, yeah.
That was my first game back after being on loan. And then I played a few games here, but then you kind of saw how it was going.
Yeah, yeah.
So memories are, it was just evolution.
Yeah.
That was Al Fayed put Wilkins in charge.
Yeah, Ray
Keegan
came in.
as his assistant.
Football, yeah. Well,
firstly, you and Ray, how did you get on?
Yeah, Ray, you could not help but get on with Ray. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Lovely bloke. Lincoln actually came in for me at one point and I didn't really want to go. And he said, he pulled me to one side. I said, look, you don't have to go. You know, they've come in for you. It's whether you want to go. And he said, look, you know, stay here as long as you want. See what happens. But, you know, for your career, think about it.
Yeah.
So he was brilliant, you know, and he was just a nice guy, and everyone says it, and it's true.
Yeah.
You know, it is true. He was a really, really nice bloke.
Yeah, he's sadly missed. And then Keegan after it.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like with Keegan?
Yeah, all right. Hey, look, he was, I think Kevin's upbringing was like not dissimilar to a lot of the younger lads that have been here. It was hard, and he had to prove himself. And then he obviously went on to be one of the best players to play for England. So, but he was a brilliant motivator.
Right.
Like, not the best coach in the world. But he was just a good motivator. He'd just sit next to you before a game and say that he thought you was the best player in this league. And you go out thinking, is Kevin Keegan telling me that? It's got to be a trend.
Totally.
So he was brilliant at that. You know, Kevin was, just his name goes before him, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, again, a bit of a statement, wasn't it?
When he came in. And part of that is saying, when I tell people now, did you used to play at Fulham? Did you play for Kevin Keegan? Yeah. Play for Kevin Keegan.
It's so strange talking to you, because I'm really getting that reminiscent feeling of it being unbelievably positive, optimistic time, but also there was a sadness there at Fulham about one thing ending, another thing starting.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling that sort of mixture on the terraces of like older people being a bit sad, like feeling that a version of their Fulham had left and it just been so positive. It's such a strange time, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I still get that now.
Yeah.
It was almost like the good times got cut short pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because it had gone from a Fulham of hard times and financial issues to then getting a team that started to win and fans going,
getting promotion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So then going, well, we're going to spend all this money. And it was like, oh, hang on a minute, we've done it. Could we not just see what we would have got to if we hadn't had that?
More years.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, because Ivan had Mickey Adams on the pitch not so long ago, and he got as big a reception as any of the big names.
Yeah.
Remembered as
it's beautiful.
Full of legend, isn't it?
And I wasn't saying that when he get a bit of money. I did, because...
He did as well. I think he got choked up on the pitch.
I do. Yeah. I genuinely do. And when Jeff texted me, I was like, I can't believe they still want to speak to me. But I have this affinity. Walking to the ground, it was like taking me back to 1996, where, and I said this to my one of the directors that I walked in with, it's like, you don't realise at the time how good it is.
Yeah.
You think you're going to play forever. You think you're going to be young forever. You're going to think you'll be footloose and fancy free forever and just enjoy life.
Yeah.
And it was, more than half my life ago.
Yeah.
But I still come here now, and I kind of can't help but smile walking into the place.
When you look out there, do you see any specific moments?
Yeah.
Can you flash back in your head or anything?
Yeah. I said Torquay, but I can remember playing Torquay here, and it was the season we got promoted. And as I said, I played wide on the right, and I remember it because obviously it's something that was good for me. But two things. That was Torquay game here, and I remember it being a Van Basten-esque goal. You remember the one he scored for Holland against...
Oh, when it comes over his shoulder.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as good as that. That's how I remember it. Yeah. But it wasn't as good as that.
Yeah.
It was Watto played it from right back of his left foot, bent it round to sort of the angle of the... I remember it being on the angle of the 18-yard box. It wasn't. It was more probably 6-7 yards inside, but I hit it first time into the far corner.
Oh, wow. Nice. Kasami.
And I remember it being... it wasn't quite as good as that, but
you could tell.
Was it
recorded? Is there any?
I think it's out there somewhere.
Is it?
Very grainy.
I was about to say, because if no one's seen it, you can tell.
It's a picture of it in Morgs's book.
Oh, is there?
Great. Yeah.
And we played Scarborough here, and I scored a couple, and but I can just remember everything I did that game was just to the max, and I played really, really well. And I can actually remember Corky say, I think it was my first goals for the club, actually, because Corky pulled me after the game and went, my wife had a dream about you last night. I went, you're right. And he said, no, that you'd scored. And I did.
Oh, no way.
So that sticks in the brain.
That is so beautiful.
But it's just like, you do get nostalgic about it. Of course you do. How can you not? This ground does that to you anyway.
Mate, I feel nostalgic seeing you. The one thing I want to know for some reason is, because I can't look at you without picturing the GMB shirts. Yeah. Mm. Did you keep
any of those shirts? Yeah.
Number eight? Was number eight?
It varied back then because you didn't have squad numbers. Yeah, so it was either 11, 7,
right, okay.
8, anything from 7 up.
Was it just opening a bag?
Everyone it was more positionally, to be fair.
Oh, right, okay.
But because we didn't play the standard 4-4-2, the front three, like Mick Conroy was always a 9, Darren Freeman was either 10 or 11, and I was 7.
Right.
Or a 9, which was a bit weird playing wide. But listen, a lot of players these days put a lot of credibility on what number they are. Back then, as
whatever
1 to 11,
given.
I was happy. Yeah.
You know.
Mate, before we go, because your team, Rotherham, are about to play Fulham in about an hour's time in the third round of the FA Cup, which people will know the score of after this. So hopefully it's a positive one for Fulham. But before I let you go, just a quick one on, because I think people have such fondness for that team. What was it like in terms of like the jollies and nights out? I'm thinking like coming back from Carlisle.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Are any moments and like, was it constant?
You could probably do a 2 or 3 hour podcast on some of the frivolities that we got up to, but it was brilliant. You know, the Carlisle one you talk about, I think we guaranteed promotion on that game, and it's a long old trip. But the first thing we used to do is stop off, create a beer. Mm. Mark Walton was the instigator of the singing karaoke at the front of the bus. Glenn Cocker always used to think he was
Rod Stewart
anyway.
And so, he still looks like Rod Stewart,
yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah, he still does. But he used to get up and have a few songs and good bit of banter. It was brilliant, you know. And then being at home here, that, you know, we used to just have a good time. It wasn't a drinking culture that was a drinking culture. It was a results culture that bred social side of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
You know, the good times came from winning games, and it was the group more than the person. Any one person in that squad can't stand out to me. It was the group. And Mickey, to be fair, cultivated that. But yeah, there were some brilliant times. I can remember some excellent nights out, and even coach, I can remember some bad ones, don't get me wrong. But if you laughed at the back of the coach when you'd lost and Mickey would turn around and give you the dead eye,
you're in trouble then.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
But it was more good times than bad.
And back here as well for the Derby game not long ago. How was that camaraderie?
Oh, the reunion.
Yeah, the reunion.
That team.
Well, it's like, you know, you hear it all the time, but, you know, it's kind of like you've never been away. And you don't tend to keep in contact with players that you play with because you're all in different parts of the country and families and whatever. You know, your life just changes. But, meeting them were brilliant again, and it's almost like banter just kicked in straight away.
I love that, man. Yeah. Well, it will always go down as one of the greatest moments in Fulham's history. And I mean that sincerely, the team you're involved in. So,
it's really
so
nice
beautiful
to
have you here, man. And that 2-3 hour special will have to come at
some other point.
I'd love to do it.
I'd love to do it because, you know, just coming back here, the memories come flooding back. So,
mate, on behalf of all the Fulham fans that'll be here tonight and all across the season, thank you for all the good times, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Cheers, man.
Rob Scott, do you know what that's made me think? I would love to get more of that 96, 97 team in.
Yeah.
If we can just litter them amongst the modern greats and bigger names of football, I think that would be something really telling about Fulham Football Club in there.
Definitely.
And the way he talks about all those players with such affection and stuff like that, it mirrors people of my age and above that witnessed that team, I think. So it's a really lovely thing. Danny Cullip, can we get Danny Cullip? Jeff, can you give Danny Cullip a call? All right.
Give him a little buzz.
Consider it booked. But not next week. Next week is...
Oh, man. It's our
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks' time. It's our all-time top scorer. Like, the guy that Mitrovic was chasing but failed miserably and thought, I'm never going to catch this guy. So he decided to jump ship and move to Saudi. That's the reason. That's the real reason.
He just knew
he could never catch him.
It's the man Mitrovic couldn't chase. Gordon Davies. Next up on Fulham Fix.
We'll leave a voicemail. Oh, hello?
Hello, who's that?
Hello, how you doing? Is that Danny?
Who's this?
It's Ivan from Fulham Football Club. I'm sitting here with Felix White as well. We're doing the Fulham Fix podcast. We've just had your mate Rob Scott on. And Fulham had your number, and we were just talking about how much we wanted to get like another hero from that era on the Fulham Fix podcast. And it literally just by chance, we had your number here at Fulham Football Club in the office. And so we thought we'd give you a buzz and see if you're up for maybe coming on the podcast next season.
What's it entail?
So we literally come on for an interview and we just chat about your time at Fulham, and hopefully you had a good time. Are your memories good at Fulham?
Very good, yeah.
Oh, man, we'll get you down. We'll either get you to the cottage or we'll get you to the training ground, whatever's easiest for you. And we'll, or even to a game, one of the games come down, and before the game we'll get you up in the studio, and myself and Felix, who's awfully quiet now, he's gone was, you know, would yeah, we just chat to you and talk to you about, you know,
for next season. Yeah,
yeah, for next season. Yeah, yeah, if you're up for that, man.
Yeah. Well, give me a shout then, because I'm in the process of moving at the moment.
Oh, mate, I can't wait. Literally this very second.
No, not this second. No. My house has got, I've got an offer on my house. I'm just waiting for the other people the other end.
Oh, nice, mate. Are you moving from you know, somewhere to
Sussex? I'm staying in Sussex. I'm just going to move closer. I'm in the village at the moment.
All right, nice, mate.
Closer to a train station where my kids are 23 and 20. So
nice, man. Oh, well, look, yeah, listen, let's yeah, I'll wait till you, yeah, life's not so manic, and yeah, maybe,
no,
it's,
that's cool. Just give me a call just to jog my memory.
Perfect, mate. Of course we will, mate. No, we look forward to it. We'll get you on.
All right,
take care, man. Awesome. Cheers, all the best. Bye.